Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Gall, and as I hope you know by now, this is the show where we talk about that admonition from Scripture. It's repeated a number of places, but perhaps the most famous one, the one that I chose for the title of the show, is Revelation 18:4, which says precisely that, "Come out of her, my people, so that you do not participate in her sins and do not partake of her plagues." By the way, the founders said something similar when they talked about the purpose of government, and the idea is that we have rights that come from God. The purpose of government is to secure those rights, and that government rests on the consent of the governed. And that when a government becomes abusive of these rights, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. In other words, to come out of her and separate themselves. All right. Well, last week I talked about some of the foundations of these things, some elements of law that go all the way back, basic principles, and essentially a number of ways that they have been undermined over the years, including the ruse of war and emergency powers. In other words, hey, if there's an emergency, Big Brother can do anything he blankety-blankin-well wants to, and you people had better just like it or lump it. Ultimately, that's not what the founders envisioned. That's not the point of the Constitution, but it is certainly one of the things that we're dealing with today. Now, let me introduce where I want to go today and kind of a follow-on to this idea of how we got where we got, and more importantly, of course, how do we come out? What do we need to understand about the process, in particular, the why of what we need to come out of and why it's more and more urgent today? Oftentimes, of course, most of you probably have heard me say this, I will pray about teachings and the things that I want to emphasize or the directions to go. This week was no exception. And honestly, I remember waking up and kind of hearing some words in my head that said, "the remnant only." And I thought, well, gee, what does that mean, the remnant only? And essentially the explanation that came to me was, this shouldn't surprise us, by the way, it's part of Isaiah's job and some of the other explanations that we've heard. Most people will simply never see the truth. In other words, here we are, America 2019, and most people will not only never see the truth, most people will refuse to see the truth. And a lot of us, I think, fall into this trap of believing that, well, if people just understood how criminally evil the government was, if they just understood a little bit about law and the Constitution or Scripture, they would, in fact, reject the evil that is now, in fact, so incredibly obvious and in your face. And they would want to come out. They would want to do the right thing. But again, I think most people simply refuse to see the truth. It's not merely that the press, the mainstream media, Big Brother, the politicians, the deep state lie to them. It's that they lap it up. They drink the Kool-Aid voluntarily. So what's new this week? Well, ultimately, I think if I had to pick one or two in-your-face examples, you'd have to look at 60 Minutes and what I would call the McCabe coup, the 60-minute scam. I could almost picture these scumbags, sitting down with the former Whoremeister, Deputy Whoremeister, and fill-in Whoremeister Andrew McCabe and saying, "Come on, Andy, let's sell some books. You got your best game face on." Associated with that, I guess what you'd have to say is we've seen more evidence of what I've been calling the Trump cave, the sellout. Now, I realize that any way you slice it, no doubt about it, this guy was light years better than the alternative, which was gun-grabbing, fascist-inspired public-private partner, big lie telling Hitlery. And for all of those reasons, that's why I contend that is the only correct pronunciation. But it does bother me. I've been hearing more and more lately about the truce that Trump got into behind closed doors all the way back to the Bush senior funeral. You know, what was the message that those folks got? Well, maybe the Bush-Clinton crime family came to some kind of an agreement with Trump. You don't push on us, we might let you live. It's been called the truce. I will suggest that whether or not that part is true, and I certainly don't know, I have been looking at things like the nomination of deep state fixer, and one of the most evil men in Washington, and that's saying a lot, is as if Robert Mueller wasn't bad enough, and as if he wasn't performing the witch hunt against the president, who does this guy pick to be the replacement AG for do-nothing Jeff Sessions? Well, a guy that makes us wish we still had Jeff Sessions. Matter of fact, you have to ask, given his history, hey, where's Janet Reno when you need her, Renacchimo? Yeah, she's dead, and she'd probably still be a better choice, because at least she couldn't do as much harm. I'm talking about William Barr, the fellow who has been involved in all kinds of cover-ups, and even Mueller, and he called each other best buds. Do you think Trump would willingly pick a scumbag like that? If he does, he's got other problems. If he didn't, it's an indication that he's caved. Any way you slice it, it don't look good. So, moral of the story, as I step back and look at all of these things that we've seen just over the last few days, some people really, truly, clearly are above the law. And they're rubbing most Americans' noses in it. And yeah, most Americans will never see the truth. They'll refuse to note it anyway. But let me ask just this one question, right? Lock her up. Have you seen any perp walks of actually guilty swamp critters? Oh, yeah. Jussie Smollett got caught literally performing his own false flag, whether he was urged onto it by some deep state people who needed to set him up as a scapegoat. We won't probably know. The only thing we'll know for sure is that he probably will get nothing more than a slap on the wrist, and there have been dozens, if not hundreds, of similar false flag attacks. Let's do something nasty and blame those people that we don't like, those evil Republicans and Trump. So have you seen any other perp walks? Comey, Hillary, McCabe, Strzok, or any of the others? Any of them wearing orange? I didn't think so. And don't hold your breath. Now, it occurred to me, too, this week, that you could almost imagine the deep state sending a Trump message and telling the guy, look, we have a big advantage over you, let's face it. When it comes to getting a conviction, as opposed to, you know, impeaching you, or if we need to, just killing you or your family, you have a problem we don't have. You need evidence, the law, maybe even live witnesses. We don't. And, hey, we have the waste stream media on our side, too. So that begins to tell the tale. When you look at all of this stuff, folks, essentially what I'm suggesting is it's hard to believe that there's even a pretense that the rule of law still matters. And that brings me to the other really big story of the week, the stink over how dare this president think that he, like those before him, can declare an emergency for just any old reason. Now, Bush, Obama, Clinton, you name it, they've been doing it for a long time. And as a matter of fact, it goes all the way back, we'll talk about that in a minute, to at least the evil Franklin Delano fascist Roosevelt. But it actually goes back further than that. And it bugs me, literally, to see all of the stinkiness surrounding how dare he think he could do this. Let me mention just one thing. I saw an absolutely disgusting Nancy Pelosi coming out and saying, oh, if Trump can declare an executive order emergency, well, we can too. We can do something far worse even. Yeah, we can declare an emergency and seize your guns. We don't. Hey, folks, who are we kidding? And that's the point we're going to go to in the next couple of minutes. This is nothing new. So here we go. I looked online. I found this story. Most folks here have probably heard about one of the most incredible overreaches, executive orders, that ought to make anything Trump's even considered. By the way, especially since there actually is a real invasion going on from the South. It's been going on, and previous presidents have ignored it, or indeed not only exacerbated it, but encouraged it. Come on in. You have the same thing in the People's Republic of California. Hey, we'll put up sanctuary cities for you. You can strew your feces on the street. We love it. And we'll probably even let you have guns that the American peons can't have. You got all kinds of other rights that they don't seem to have. Why not? Well, here we go. I went back and looked, and it's not hard to find Executive Order 13603 online. This was one of the most evil and overreaching, incredible things that a bathhouse Barry Sabarco, the guy with all the aliases, signed. And what I found was an interesting piece, actually kind of sort of from the Waste Stream Media. This is from Forbes, from Jim Powell, author, who covers economic and political history for Forbes. It's actually several years old. It's dated April 29th, 2012. But it's really informative to see what he wrote even then. This was shortly after Obama signed his executive order saying, hey, you think you got property? We can take it anytime we feel like it. Forget the need for an emergency. If I decide to declare one, we'll just take everything you got. And that's a real brief summary, but we'll go into a bit more detail. Trump did nothing even remotely similar by comparison. And yet, you've got people like Andrew P. Napolitano, former federal judge, and I used to respect the guy more than I do nowadays, coming out and saying, how dare this president think he can perform, and he calls it Trump's brazen unconstitutional overreach. Come on, Andy, where you been? Haven't you been paying attention? So let's look and see instead what EO13603 looks like and talk about real overreach. Obama, writes the Forbes guy, has made it clear he's determined to continue pushing his progressive agenda regardless of constitutional limitations on his power. He aims to have his way by issuing more and more executive orders, the most ominous of which appeared on March 16, 2012, just a little less than a month before the article I'm looking at, when President Obama signed EO Executive Order 13603 entitled National Defense Resources Preparedness. And this 10-page document, he says, you can find it online, folks, is a blueprint for a federal takeover completely of the economy that would dwarf the other unconstitutional overreaches that Obama has already done, like the takeover of health care and the insurance business. Specifically, the Obama e-order includes all of the following, seizing control of. Now, I don't have time to read the whole 10 pages, folks, but just listen to the list here. All commodities, all products that are capable of being ingested by either human beings or animals. Hey, that not only means food, it means drugs, herbs, supplements, water, medicine, you name it. Talk about an overreach and seizing the power that ought to have people up in arms, literally. Well, we're not done. All forms of energy, all forms of civil transportation, boats, cars, planes, trains, automobiles, trucks, even farm tractors, you name it, they can take it. All usable water from all sources. Well, there you go. You can't live very long if Big Brother comes and takes all your food and all your water and all your ability to go get it, to all your tools, you name it, folks. This list is comprehensive, and if you got it, Big Brother claims he can take it. How's that for an emergency? All health resources, drugs, biological products, medical devices, materials, facilities, health supplies, resources, services, equipment. And not only that, they can conscript you, put you into forced labor. It's called induction, as they delicately refer to it. So, you talk about wanting to be a slave or not wanting to be a slave? Well, Obama has it all taken care of. Let me quote Pelosi from February 16th of this year, the speaker for the traitors. I think she's not quite so stupid as to not be aware of what Obama had already claimed. But given that, this is particularly telling. This traitor said, quote, if a president can declare an emergency and on something that he has created as an emergency, an illusion that he wants to convey, just think what a president with different values can present to the American people. Well, folks, we don't have to imagine it. We know. You can read it, EO13603. She was talking about gun confiscation. Come on. Obama was talking about confiscating everything and literally leaving people to die. Moreover, under the same EO, federal officials would, quote, issue regulations to prioritize and allocate resources, and each government bureaucracy shall act, quote, as necessary and appropriate. It's a total grant of complete power. Now, most people will point out, including the author Jim Powell here for Forbes, much of this language certainly has appeared in other national security executive orders that previous presidents have put forth periodically since the beginning of the Cold War, including continuity of government. All right, here's my point with all of this. Understand that for all of the, weeping and gnashing and complaints about how dare Trump issue an executive order and call an emergency when it's just a few people, like tens of thousands of people, invading across the southern border. The Constitution actually talks about foreign invasion and says that really is an emergency. But, not the kinds of things that these people are talking about. Continuity of government, another example. More, though, says Jim Powell, than previous national security executive orders, Obama's 13603 seems to describe a potentially totalitarian regime, gee, do you think, obsessed with total control over everything. Obama's executive order makes no effort, none whatsoever, to justify the complete destruction of liberty, no effort to explain how amassing totalitarian control would enable government to deal effectively with, well, anything, cyber sabotage, suicide bombings, chemical warfare, nuclear missiles, or other possible threats. It's quite likely, in fact, there'd be greater difficulty responding to threats, since totalitarian regimes do tend to suffer from economic chaos, colossal waste, massive corruption, and bureaucratic infighting that are the inevitable consequences of extreme centralization. He notes, hey, you can look at fascist Italy, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, communist China, and other regimes, most recently, of course, Venezuela, but hey, that's a different story now, isn't it? May go back to the Trump cave. Totalitarian control would probably even trigger resistance movements and underground networks, just like it did when they were tried in Western Europe during the Nazi occupation. Totalitarian control could provoke more political turmoil than there was during the Vietnam War era. Probably there'd be a flight, too, to a freedom, a brain drain, as talented people tried to get the hell out of the totalitarian U.S. In other words, there's nothing in EO 13603 that's positive, especially when it comes to upholding the Constitution or protecting civil liberties. Now, what happens next, and we'll do this briefly through the bottom of the hour break here, is that this author, Jim Powell, goes into some detail about history. And it's more detailed than you're going to hear from the Clinton News Network or the WAPO or the others concerning this stuff, as they basically try to say, imagine a president trying to execute this unprecedented amount of power. Give me a break. They're lying through their teeth. Under what circumstances, too, he asks, would a president try to carry out such an audacious plan? Well, EO 13603 says with ominous ambiguity, during the full spectrum of emergencies. When the United States, hey, wait a minute, it's already in, not one, but multiple states of national emergency. Back in 2012, this guy notes President George W. Bush declared one, September 14, 2001. It was extended again by Obama, and there are many, many, many others dating back to 1933. So let's take a quick look, he says, through the dark world of EOs. A type of presidential power most people know little, if anything, about. And I'll say, hey, that was then. It's worse today because now they're getting disinfo and lies. Many presidents have pushed to expand their powers beyond constitutional limits. Gee, do you think? Particularly during so-called crises. Issuing EOs or executive orders is the easiest way to do it. And it can be about anything, large and small. Paul Begala, I've quoted this many times, advisor to the rapist president himself, Bill Clinton, reportedly remarked, stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool. I guess it's really cool if you're a Democrat. It's not so cool if you're Trump, because he can't get away with something like that. What about the Constitution? Well, notes everybody who's ever looked at it, there's nothing whatsoever in the Constitution that authorizes an executive order. And since they're not authorized, I guess you'd argue, well, there's nothing in there that limits the power either. It's just that, well, it's a power never enumerated or granted to the central government at all in a lot of cases, especially the power to seize private property, take people's stuff. That means they're slaves, folks, not free individuals. Executive orders, said the Congressional Research Service, arise from implied constitutional and statutory authority. And if it's issued under a valid claim of authority and published in the Federal Register, that makes it important, EOs may have the force and effect of law. Supreme Court has occasionally tried to establish some limitations, but basically not much. Very few of the thousands, literally thousands of executive orders, 13603, you remember, have ever been challenged legally, and most members of Congress are almost as ignorant about them as they are about what form of government we're supposed to have. A republic, madam, if you can keep it. They don't even understand what a democracy is and how it's and why it's prohibited in the Constitution. Sometimes, of course, president issues executive orders to bypass Congress when his party didn't control it. And he notes, hey, guess who issued more executive orders than any other president? Starting when he was most popular. Answer, the fascist Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Until the 20th century, orders like this were generally undocumented. As late as the 1930s, the New York Times published an account claiming, quote, "There are no readily available means of ascertaining the true text and history of the 1,000 or more EOs issued since March 4 of 1933. Of course, after March the 9th of 1933, a declaration of Roosevelt's and a state of emergency literally has kind of put a wooden stake in what was left of the Constitution. They go all the way back to George Washington and his first proclamation. Evil Abe Lincoln, Mr. I will destroy the Constitution in the name of protecting the Union, turning it into a roach motel. You check in, you never check out. He expanded presidential powers via proclamations and executive orders in the name of suppressing rebellion rather than waging war, since Congress was supposed to have the power to do that, not Lincoln, but he did what he wanted to do anyway. Famously, he suspended habeas corpus, the legal action that requires a prisoner to be set free. Show me the body. The story here of Ex Parte Merriman is related. If you haven't heard this, this was a guy who was arrested and detained at Fort McHenry in Baltimore. And they made some claims. His lawyer obtained a writ of habeas corpus from Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roger B. Taney, who directed George Cadwallader, commander of Fort McHenry, to produce Merriman and explain the facts and the legal basis for his detention. Cadwallader refused, saying Lincoln unilaterally had suspended habeas corpus. Taney cited him for contempt, but a marshal wasn't allowed to enter the fort to deliver the contempt citation to the commander. So Taney wrote the famous Ex Parte Merriman opinion, saying in part, quote, "If the authority which the Constitution has confided to the Judiciary Department may upon any pretext be usurped by the military power, the people of the United States are no longer living under a government of laws." Folks, that was in the early 1860s. In 1862, after the stink, September 24th, to be precise, Lincoln issued a proclamation officially suspending habeas corpus, meaning the government could detain people for any reason, indefinitely. A historian named Mark Neely Jr., Pulitzer Prize winner, noted that Lincoln managed the home front in part by means of military arrests of civilians. Thousands and thousands of them. So here you go. Lincoln, probably one of the most overreaching, federally powerful presidents in U.S. history. As a matter of fact, he's revered because he basically tore up the Constitution and said, "I'll do what I blankety-blanking well want to." He detained indefinitely thousands upon thousands of people. Not a problem. You don't hear the individuals today squawking about the president trying to prevent a bunch of illegal aliens from literally invading the U.S. in the same frame, do you? Lincoln issued executive orders expanding the amount of Union territory subject to military control. Justice David Davis wrote, after the Civil War, quote, "The Constitution of the United States is a law for rulers and for people, equally in war and in peace, and covers with the shield of protection all classes of men at all times in all circumstances," unquote. And gee, how far have we come from that? Historian James G. Randall wrote, "No president has carried the power of presidential edict and executive order independently of Congress so far as Lincoln did. It would not be easy to state what Lincoln conceived of as the limit of his powers." Okay, there's more history from Lincoln, but let's move on down. Teddy Roosevelt issued 1,006 executive orders, more than any previous president. He actually wrote, quote, "I believe in strong executive. I believe in power." And his biographer, Henry Pringle, said of T.R., "It seldom occurred to Roosevelt that the duty of the executive was to carry out the mandates of the legislative. Insofar as he was able, he reversed that theory. Congress, he felt, must obey the president, and he wanted the Supreme Court to obey him too," acknowledging, quote, "I did greatly broaden the use of executive power." And in dramatic contrast to founder and early president James Madison, who defined tyranny as the concentration of all power, executive, legislative, and judicial, all in the same hands, as the very essence of tyranny, Teddy the Tyrant Roosevelt said, "I don't think any harm comes from it." Wrong, and we'll be right back. Just like yesterday. Welcome back now, folks, to the second half of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and today we're talking about, basically, something that I address frequently on this show, but it seems ever more important. What is law? Certainly we know that there comes a time, and I think we're there, when lawlessness abounds and the love of many has already grown cold. Witness what you see in the, from Hollywood, from the swamp critters, and literally every evening on the news. There is a continuing expansion of the intent to undermine any constitutional protections, all the while a whole bunch of posturing people who never bothered to read the document telling us what the Constitution should have said, just like they do the Bible. You know, it's what the Bible should have said if God was as smart as we are. And I think there's a continuous, very similar spirit at work in both of those places. As we went to break, I was talking a little bit about the history of executive orders and how it is that we've got to the place now where Trump is being criticized for one tiny little emergency that actually has to do with a genuine invasion, while we've had any number of excuses, thousands upon thousands of them, for executive orders that do far worse, and declarations of emergency for pretty much you name it. Dozens upon dozens that are still not only recently, but still in effect. So as we went to break, I was talking about Teddy Roosevelt, who said, when it comes to being drunk with power and executive orders, quote, "I don't think any harm comes from the concentration of power in one man's hands." Well, George III didn't think so. The colonists rebelled against that. They wrote a constitution to prevent it, and it's pretty well gone away now. Woodrow Wilson, Mr. Make the World Safe for Democracy, issued 1,791 executive orders. And, of course, the fascist, evil Franklin Delano Roosevelt broke the record. He issued 3,723 EOs. And even in his inaugural address, he said he would ask Congress for broad executive power to wage a war against, what, the emergency, meaning the depression, as great as the power that would be given me if it were in fact invaded, if we were in fact invaded by a foreign foe. Now, think about that. That's almost, folks, a punchline. Ponder the irony here. This is Roosevelt asking for unconstitutional powers to deal with an economic emergency that would be almost as great, he said, if we were in fact invaded by a foreign foe. Here's Trump talking about invasion by a foreign foe, and they're telling him, "Oh, you don't got no power at all, and we'll take away your stroke of the pen law of the land." If you don't remember, I talked some about this last week. One of the greatest usurpations of unconstitutional power in U.S. history. We're still dealing with the effects. March the 6th of 1933, FDR issued Proclamation 2029, citing Wilson's Trading with the Enemies Act to justify ordering banks closed for a national bank holiday. He then sent his emergency banking bill to the House of Representatives, and it was passed after only 38 minutes of debate, apparently without anybody actually bothering to read it because they didn't have time, among other things. And in 1933, March the 9th, and, subsequently, Roosevelt issued order after order. We'll get to those in a second. But Executive Order 6102 made it illegal for Americans, now slaves, to own honest money, gold bullion, or gold certificates, even though historically gold provided the best protection against inflation and monetary crises, the exact thing that Roosevelt was claiming to fix all the while he was stealing the American people's gold. He, after stealing the American people's gold, devalued the dollar and stole 40% of their savings. Of course, Obama and his EO wants to steal it all. Violators faced the prospect of what was then real money, a fine of 10 grand or up to 10 years in prison for trying to be free citizens. Since economic fascism was popular during the early 1930s, even Forbes admits this, FDR issued a number of executive orders to suspend antitrust laws and establish Achtung German-style cartels in dozens of industries. Above-market wages discouraged employers from hiring. Remember, we're trying to fix a depression and the biggest unemployment until now, at least, in history. And above-market prices discourage consumers from buying. There's a whole list of his EOs here, dozens of industries. With EOs, FDR multiplied the number of government bureaucracies, too. He established all kinds of them. You've heard some of the names. The CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, via Executive Order 6101, the WPA 6174, and then there were dozens of others, literally. National Recovery Review Board, National Resources Board, Works Projects Administration, you name it. But they didn't work. In May of 1939, FDR Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Morgenthau, lamented, quote, "We're spending more than we've ever spent before, and it does not work. After 8 years of this administration, we have just as much unemployment as when we started." The New Deal unemployment averaged, this is the official numbers, folks, 17%, and it didn't go down basically until the government began removing 10 million or so men from the civilian workforce due to what? Sending them overseas for World War II. In 1974, and we talked about this last week as well, the Senate Committee on National Emergencies and Delegated Emergency Powers revealed that, quote, "Since March the 9th of 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency." That's a continuing state, folks, ever since 1933. At the time they wrote this, 1974, they said there are now in effect four presidentially proclaimed states of national emergency. They list them all. Here, we'll skip over that. But interestingly, two of them were by Tricky Dick Nixon, March the 23rd, 1970, and famously, August the 15th of 1971, when Tricky Dick reneged on the promise that the dollar was as good as gold and closed the gold window. These proclamations, says the Senate back in 1974, give force to 470 provisions of federal law, delegating to the president extraordinary powers, ordinarily exercised by the Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. The president may, listen to this, seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the lives and the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all Americans. Again, that was 1974. And, of course, they passed what was called the National Emergencies Act, meaning now presidents have to essentially just keep renewing the old ones, which they routinely do. And we talked about some of these. Interestingly, Forbes notes that August 15th of 1971, when Tricky Dick closed the gold window, it was called his new economic policy, which just happens to coincide with what the Bolshevik Vladimir Lenin called one of his misadventures. And then, of course, you remember the failure of wage price controls. Matter of fact, dismal failure. Nixon's executive orders made a bad situation worse. And you'd have thought that that experiment with socialism would have been a lesson. But, of course, we have an entire Congress and a bunch of idiots that have never bothered to read history, much less the Constitution. Then, fast forward to 1999, when the rapist president, Bill Clinton, waged war via executive orders. He issued orders that declared the governments of Yugoslavia and the Republic of Serbia, quote, "an extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States." So he declared a national emergency. Serbia? Montenegro? An extraordinary threat to the national security of the United States. But thousands of illegal alien invaders, including MS-13 and drug pushers and ISIS coming across the uncontrolled southern border, that's not? Can you smell the irony here? Once again, notes this piece, and this was again 2012, but it's still in effect. We are in an open-ended and national emergency declared September 14th, 2001, by the late President George Herbert Walker Bush. Obama notified Congress, of course. He was extending it again and again. So the president still has those powers, unless, I guess, he's, you know, that guy, the orange man. So how can an executive order be revoked? Well, by another EO, by legislation, by Congress, and so forth. I'm going to skip over some of that. Congress adopted the War Powers Resolution in 1973 in the aftermath of the undeclared Vietnam War. And basically, it hadn't stopped presidents continuing to use undeclared, unauthorized wars. We haven't had a declared war, as you probably are aware, since 1941. Basically, Congress commonly acquiesces to federal power. Well, to expanded presidential power. For example, and here's an interesting one, and notice there's not much stink about this one compared to what Trump is doing, is there? Well, there has been in the intervening years, but I do guess it makes sense to review it. During World War II, FDR issued Executive Order 9102 in 1942, establishing the War Relocation Authority to forcibly transpose Japanese Americans from the Pacific Coast into relocation camps, Achtung, that was upheld by the Supreme Court 6-3 in the infamous Korematsu v. United States claim. Later, they said, oh, we're so sorry, but by then it was a little bit too late for all those people that were interred via the executive order power. And it goes on and on and on, folks. Essentially, Chief Justice William Rehnquist, in another case in 1981, said, we conclude that Congress, when it acquiesces to a presidential action, infers that the president lacks the power. Well, no, doesn't lack the power, because they didn't stop him to do what he wants to do. There have only been two cases of an executive order actually being overturned by a court. The most famous one, Harry Truman, 1952, that ordered the Secretary of Commerce to stop a steelworker strike by seizing privately owned steel mills. Now, we'll come back to this one briefly. It's called Youngstown Sheet and Tube versus Sawyer. And essentially, a Supreme Court justice named Robert Jackson was incredulous. He actually can read the Constitution. He said, if we seek instruction from our own times, we can only match it from the executive powers in those governments that we disparagingly describe as totalitarian. So he's basically saying seizing private property is totalitarian. But Obama wrote an EO, and I didn't hear much stink about that now. And it was a continuation of other EOs that came before it and keep getting extended. Can you smell the stench here? Can you notice the difference? I'm going to read a brief comment from Wikipedia. Now, this ought to kind of raise the hackles on the back of our head. This is about Executive Order 13603. Obama's basically, we can seize anything we want. And you can go to Snopes.com, which they did. One of the so-called fact checkers that I wouldn't suggest is worth even bothering to read, but they are humorous. Despite claims, wrote Snopes, that the executive order, 13603, provided the president with unprecedented new powers, declaring martial law, seizing private property, blah-de-blah-de-blah, all that kind of stuff. This was merely a minor update of a similar order issued by President Bill Clinton, the sainted one, in 1994, which in fact had decades-old predecessors. So there you go. See, the fact that we've been doing this and claiming the power and getting away with it means it must be okay. Can you see the incredible hypocrisy and contradictions here? Well, there's more, too. From the opinion in this case by Robert Jackson, there's, quote, no statute which expressly or implicitly authorizes the president to take possession of property, as he did here. Well, hey, we've seen Obama and so many others say, yeah, we can do it if we feel like it. Who's going to stop us? Trump tries to build a wall. And that's a big stink. This article from 2012 concludes by author Jim Powell saying, hopefully President Obama will never try to implement the powers he claims in EO 13603 to seize control of everything, including our lives and our economy. But the plan is sitting there, waiting to go, awaiting the right moment. One morning, Americans could wake up to the news that Obama is activating it because of, well, pick a claim. Cyber sabotage, terrorist incident, nuclear crisis, a war with Iran, or fill in the blank. Or, he says, perhaps the president might simply decide that to win the fall election, he needs an October surprise. Can you smell the difference here, the problems? Now, what really inspired me to spend the time talking about all of this was a piece from Judge Andrew P. Napolitano that I used to have more admiration for than I certainly do. Looks like if Trump has sold out and has entered into some kind of an agreement, to live and let live, we'll let the criminals get away with it. Some people really are above the law. Maybe Napolitano has signed up for the same deal. Now, he's never been what I'd call an unqualified constitutionalist, but he comes closer to reading it than most federal judges. For example, I've never heard Napolitano actually say that shall not be infringed, for example, means shall not. But he does say that, well, at least there are certain federal laws that might be unconstitutional because they infringe the living hell out of the right to keep and bear arms. He wrote a piece this week, I've already mentioned it, entitled Trump's Brazen Unconstitutional Overreach. And I'm going to suggest, if it's not clear, that he's full of it. Not that he's wrong, per se, but good grief. He focuses on this after decade upon decade of unconstitutional gang rape, overstep, and infringement of literally everything in the Bill of Rights, from unconstitutional searches and seizures to we don't need no stinking warrant to, universal background checks in several states and plans to implement them nationwide along with gun seizure. We don't have a right to freedom of assembly, freedom of worship, freedom of speech, not if Big Brother says otherwise, you know. And he focuses on this. Here's what this is what Judge Napolitano says, Trump's unconstitutional overreach. After he signed the legislation, remember that, he caved last week, with little money for his wall, he's then signed an executive order, just as he threatened, declaring a national emergency at the U.S.-Mexico border. Well, folks, if an invasion isn't a national emergency, as even the evil FDR admitted, well, what the heck is? So he ordered the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security to divert unspent, already allocated by Congress appropriations into building a wall. Was it legal for him to do so? Says Napolitano, in a word, no. Yeah, meet Justice Jackson. And he describes the case I've already mentioned, Youngstown Sheet and Tube versus Sawyer, the steel seizure case, about occupying private property. Okay, great. Yeah, it was unconstitutional. So is just about everything else that's been going on for 100 years. And he chooses this time to suddenly find a problem with it? Quote, but when the president acts in an area that the Constitution gives exclusively to Congress, such as spending money. Whoa, whoa! Hey, Judge, have you noticed? We haven't spent money for 100 years. Certainly not since 1933. It's not gold and silver coin anymore. It wasn't gold after 1933, and it wasn't even silver after 1965. They're not spending money. They're printing money out of nothing via an unconstitutional organization, the Federal Reserve, that if we read that Constitution, wouldn't exist anyway. These are lies built upon lies. Says Napolitano, this all underscores the separation of powers. You know, the thing Teddy Roosevelt, when he wrote his order, said, I don't see any problem with it. The most integral, unique aspect of our Constitution. Well, yeah, on this one, Napolitano is right. But the problem is, he says, he's trying to spend money not explicitly authorized by Congress. Well, it was money that at least at one time was appropriated. We're talking about splitting hairs here. Now, I'm going to ask an interesting question. I think it's an interesting question. Could you imagine the stink, folks, if the president just simply did something really, I think, clever? Suppose Trump came out and said, you know what? I think it's wrong if we're claiming that we're never going to be a socialist country to have Executive Order 13603 still out there stinking. The seizure of everything, all commodities, energy, transportation, water, you name it, food. Imagine if Trump revoked, undid it. He has the power. If he was a Democrat, he could. But then, of course, they wouldn't let him do it anyway. Imagine if Trump revoked 13603. Can you imagine the stink that would be had there? Probably even worse than trying to stop an invasion. The point is, I would encourage folks to focus on what the real law is and isn't, and don't be distracted by the smoke screens. I mentioned a story earlier today on the news written by Charles Hugh Smith. Let's face it, he says, the U.S. Constitution has failed. It was supposed to limit the power of government over the citizenry, the power of each branch of government, and the power of the financial and political elite, the deep state, over the government and citizenry, because the founders recognized the problem with an all-powerful, almighty state. Has it failed? You betcha. Now, I at this point quote John Adams, who said, this Constitution is fit for the governance of an educated and moral people only. It is totally inadequate for that of any other. And we now see just how right he was. By the way, a moral people, Adams made it clear, a moral people is God-fearing, spiritually obedient, and as the founders wrote, well-regulated. What does that mean? It means they're regulated by their obedience to the supreme law and their creator, not regulated by a different law and a different fake God. I want to wrap things up today with just a brief understanding of what all this means and what the implications are. Because I got to thinking this week, this is part of the reason why I decided to do this show. Look at, well, among others, the state of New York, literally celebrating Roe versus Wade by saying, we're going to sacrifice some babies. You got the governor of Virginia, Mr. Blackface, baby killer himself, who says, hey, we can whack them up until, no, after post-birth abortion. We don't care. It's all about making sure we know who is boss. And hint, it's not the Bible, and it's got nothing to do with life or liberty or property or even, well, anything that was once called the constitutional limits. In the scripture, you'll find that there are references to this fake god Molech. Other gods that are in there too, Baal, Beelzebub, Hasatan, the adversary, and others. One of the things that those days, these old people, used to do is burn their babies. Well, what they did is they'd heat up this cherry red idol, a Molech made out of a metal, brass, or bronze, or something, to where he was cherry red, put the baby in its arms, and the baby would literally burst into flames. How's that for nasty evil? Well, wait a minute. You know how they commit abortion in a lot of these so enlightened places? Answer, they reach in with a pair of pliers. This is grisly and gross, but might as well understand it. And they pull the arms off the baby. They pull the legs off the baby. Then they pull the body out, and they break the head open and suck out the brains, or just kill it, as if it wasn't already dead. I got to ask it, is that a more or less barbaric and idolatrous than just burning them alive? Admittedly, folks, this is a tough call. What that leads me to is a brief look at Ezekiel chapters 8 and 9. And I almost started with this, but I think it's a great way to end. If you understand the story, this is the place where the prophet is told, hey, son of man, understand some things. The hand of Yahuwah fell upon me, he writes. This is chapter 8. And he said, lift your eyes. And basically he goes on for the next dozen or so verses saying, he looked around and there are abominations upon abominations upon abominations. Look over here, you'll see even greater abominations. All kinds of things that we recognize as, Ishtar sun god day, the feast of Lent or the fast, you know, you name it. If you actually understand that there are a lot of practices that he was describing as abominations, that yes, the whore church still does. See all these abominations. And then he says the following. The angels, the malakim, the messengers are called. Let those who have charge over the city draw near, each with a deadly weapon in his hand. Six men came from the direction of the upper gate, and the glory of Elohim of Israel shone upon them. And he said, basically, go throughout the land. He's talking to an angel with the inkhorn. Put a mark on the foreheads of all the men who sigh and cry at the abominations that are done within it. And he says, basically, anybody that does not have my mark, anybody that is not sighing and crying about all these abominations, kill them. Man, women, child, kill them all. And guess what? Begin at my sanctuary. The iniquity of the house of Israel and of Judah is exceedingly great. The land is full of bloodshed, the city full of perversity. They do not see. Let me just ask it as a question. Does any of that sound familiar? Does anything that's going on today make us think, hey, maybe it's time to sigh and cry? Ask ourselves the question, who are we kidding? What kind of abominations are being done in our name? Should we allow this quietly, or should we withdraw our consent and say, hell no! I have nothing to do. I want nothing to do with these abominations and what these people call law. It is disgusting. And I'll end with a homework assignment. Go take a look at the book of Esther, particularly chapter 3, verse 8, where the evil Haman says we're going to kill all these people who have a different law. And actually, the Hebrew word in there means decrees, edicts. Then we do. These people don't keep the king's edicts. So he demonizes them, kind of like we're seeing today for certain people, and puts a price on their heads. And it's followed up in chapter 4, verse 14, by Mordecai's famous admonition to Queen Esther. If you remain completely silent, he says at this time, well, relief and deliverance will come from someone else, but you and your father's house will perish. Quote, yet, who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? And all of that is still true today, folks. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.